Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show underway, brought to you by Hilbing Auto Body. Remember, when it happens to you, take it to Hilbing. Well, we've got Laura Sievert here, and we're kind of going to go in chronological order, if you don't mind. The Dr. Richard Eales Annual Open House is this Sunday, February 23rd, from 1 to 4 at the Underground Railroad site at the Dr. Richard Eales House. And Arts Quincy is very involved in this, so please tell us all about it, Laura.
Yeah, it's really one of my favorite sites, and you can actually read a little more about it coming up in the next issue of Q Magazine, which is going to be a neat article that Arts Quincy's put in to Q Magazine through the Herald Whig. But the Eales House, of course, is one of our most historic known underground railroad sites. The doctor and his wife moved to Quincy specifically to help slaves escape. This is one of the very first places that anyone stopped, so they were coming over from Missouri or up from Arkansas or even further south than that, and this was their first stop on the way to hopefully freedom in Canada. So you'll hear about the story of Charlie. The reason that we know about Dr. Eales as opposed to some of the other people who conducted on the Underground Railroad is because eventually he was caught.
Yes, he was.
Right. So
and it went all the way to the Supreme Court.
It did. And he was actually prosecuted by
Stephen Douglas.
Yeah, which I think is a...
Quincy and Stephen Douglas, yes.
That's right. At any rate, he was caught trying to help a slave named Charlie escape. He was from Monticello, he was prosecuted for this. But they think that he helped up to a couple of hundred people escape onto at least the next place on the Underground Railroad, which is an amazing story. So Quincy has this great history of helping people in their time of need and being on the front lines of sort of the next state over from a slave state. So it was a big deal. So
yeah,
come learn about it. The program is great. We were just talking about Mette Morris before we got on the air. She is a fabulous resource, but she's giving a terrific program. And she'll do some spirituals, too. She's an amazing vocalist. I mean,
yes,
just, you know, it's worth the trip just to hear her sing. But she knows quite a lot about it. And, again, that Eales House open house is usually very well attended. It is the February 23rd, this Sunday, from 1 to 4. It is free to attend, but they'll, of course, have a box out for donations and really appreciate anybody helping them keep that house open to the public.
Okay. Then on Tuesday, February 25th, from 12:30 to 5:30 at the Oakley Lindsay Civic Center, there's a blood drive put on by Arts Quincy, I understand.
That's right.
Be an angel.
This is, I themed it this way because I've been working with Underbrinks. We just had that big cake contest. They won our most artistic cake designer challenge here a couple of weeks ago at our fundraiser. And I've been thinking about angel food cakes because they get in my, you know, anybody who's been to Underbrinks knows why angel food cakes were in my head. So anyone who comes and donates blood at this Be an Angel blood drive will get an angel food cake from Underbrinks Bakery. Personally, I think that's as good of an incentive as any, but also you're going to be helping a lot of people. We've actually formed a team. So Arts Quincy hosts four blood drives a year, and we formed a team. It's called the Bleeding Arts. Get it?
Yay, the Bleeding Arts.
You can join it by downloading the American Red Cross app and searching the Bleeding Arts. We would love to have you. Right now, our team members have impacted at least 200 lives, which is really, really cool, through blood donations. So we're also going to be honoring Danny White of the Quincy Community Theater, who is donating his fourth gallon of blood. So he's been doing it since like 1998, and he'll be getting a four-gallon pin at this event. So
that's going to be great. Tuesday, February 25th, 12:30 to 5:30. You may have 4 gallons. They're not going to take it all at once. Just be sure to get there, and everybody gets a sandwich and an Underbrinks Bakery. It's not just sugar that they replenish. They give you orange juice and other stuff, too. Okay, the Russians are coming because in Siberia, very cold now. Come to Illinois, we're not quite so cold. On Wednesday, February 26th, the Siberian State Symphony Orchestra will be performing from the Quincy Civic Music Association.
Not only are these tickets hot, but I have heard from 4 people in my office this week that said, we heard about it on the Mary Griffith Show. And that's why we're up here.
Yes.
That's why we're up here buying tickets. The Siberian State Symphony Orchestra is the next up on the Quincy Civic Music season. Terrific group. They've been here once before, and we had such good attendance that they brought them back And they'll be doing some amazing classical music at the Quincy Junior High School. This is next Wednesday, February 26th at 7:30. They're an international touring group, and they're going to be right here in town. So highly recommended. Lots of, you know, of course, Morrison Theater is a great venue.
Right.
Get those tickets now. They are at the Arts Quincy office. If you have been into Hy-Vee or Brown Drug lately and not been able to get tickets, they have been replenished as of this morning. I did check on it. So tickets are selling well, and love to have you. $25 in advance, $27 at the door. And Arts Quincy has some subsidized free tickets for veterans and first responders. So if you're a veteran or a first responder here in Quincy who wants to attend, I have about four sets of tickets that we can send you to just give us a call at the Arts Quincy office, and we will hook you up with those tickets.
And that number is?
What is our phone number? 222-3432. I knew that.
Read one more time.
It's been a long week.
222-3432.
That's it.
Okay, folks, so lots of great stuff coming up. Go to artsquincy.org, artsquincy.org. Go to quincycivicmusic.org for more information about the Siberian Symphony coming with Boris and
Natasha.
Natasha and Moose and Squirrel. They will all be here. Coming up, Les Fonza in the green room. We're going to be talking about the Brotherhood Banquet. Stay tuned. I've got two good-looking gentlemen in the newsroom here with me, so I better cool my jets. I'll be in trouble. Les Fonza is here, and so is the Reverend Carl Terry from the Bethel AME Church. He's the pastor there. We're going to be talking today about the 56th Annual Brotherhood Banquet. It is coming up this Saturday, but there's some big changes. Some changes in time and some other things. So, Les, why don't you start out and give us the particulars, if you don't mind.
Well, like you said, this is our 56th annual Brotherhood Banquet, and we're holding this at the Senior Center. And we usually have it in the evening, but this year we're going to do it at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, kind of hoping that we get people to come out so they don't have to be out late at night.
That becomes more and more problematic, and hopefully you'll have some pretty good weather, I think. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some good weather, so that's the good thing, too. So at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, are you actually going to be serving a late lunch then, or how's that going to work?
We're serving a full dinner. We have prime rib.
Oh!
Yes. And then we have some nice entertainment. As you come in, hopefully that you would get there, you know, anywhere from quarter till... because we want to start the program right at 2 o'clock. There'll be music by the Messengers, and then there'll be some preliminaries with the national anthem and prayers and what have you. And then we'll start the dinner. And like I said, it'll be prime rib.
Okay.
And then there will be a program. We have a young lady who is going to say the ABCs of the Bible. She's going to every letter in the alphabet has to do with something in a verse from the Bible.
Great.
Young lady's going to do that. And then we have a group called New Dimensions, I believe it is. It's a gospel group that's going to perform also.
Okay. Well, we're going to give you a phone number in a minute, so grab a pencil, because if you want tickets, you're going to have to call, because that prime rib, you know, they got to make sure there's enough. Now, Reverend Carl Terry from Bethel AME Church, you better be dressed sharp like you are today, because I understand your boss is coming in. Is that true?
Actually, we had to make a change because there was a situation.
It's not going to be John Franklin.
No, it's not. It's going to be James Bailey, Reverend James Bailey, who is from here.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's okay. I'll take James Bailey any day. Okay. So you can let your guard down. Your boss isn't coming, right?
Not that particular boss. I got another boss coming, but not that boss.
You're not off the hook yet.
No.
The Brotherhood Banquet. Who should be coming? Who should be coming to this, Reverend Terry? I mean, what kind of people are you hoping to attract to this Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock?
Well, we're actually looking at all people coming. Brotherhood extends to everybody as far as unity. We probably should name it Brotherhood and Sisterhood, being politically correct. So we probably need to do that right now. But however, I just got here, so I don't want to...
Humanhood.
Yeah,
we'll just go
there
with
you go.
But you're trying to bring everybody together. And,
yes.
And it's interesting, because last night I had the pleasure of hearing Matt Morris talk about Negro spirituals and, you know, some of the hidden symbolism in the Underground Railroad and the early adaptation of slaves to the Christian faith. And so there's just a whole lot going on in our society, And we do need to come together. All races, all religions, all faiths need to come together now. All colors, all creeds, men, women, black, white. This is a time when we should be expressing brotherhood in that truest sense of the word.
If we don't, then we'll be making ourselves vulnerable to anything that comes around us. I am often reminded that people stood up for us. People died for us so that we can have a voice, all of us. And, you know, in America, everybody came here one way or another. So
I came in a somewhat similar fashion to you. My family was put on a boat, too, basically because the people that owned us couldn't feed us anymore. So they just sent us over and made us America's problem. You know, the British said, what are we going to do with all these Irish? Mm-hmm. We got to get rid of some of them, the ones that can't work hard, which, you know, that's why my family, we weren't the most ambitious, I guess. That's how we got over here. But, you know, we all came here from somewhere, whether we came willingly or whether we came with a gleam in our eye for hope of a better life. The problem now is, how do we make that American dream? How do we make that better life? So,
matter of fact, when you speak about the Irish, you also speak about St. Patrick, who was kidnapped.
Yes.
All right. So,
kidnapped's a nice way to put it. Yeah.
He was kidnapped and put into slavery.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, so, indeed. Yes, indeed he was. So it extends to almost all cultures have some story. I mean, almost every group has been oppressed. Women have been oppressed. Blacks have been oppressed. The Irish have been oppressed. Yes. Right now, you know, people that coming from Central America, they probably feel oppression. So at this time, it's the Brotherhood Banquet, 56th annual, just a time to kind of come together and say, these things unite us rather than divide us.
Exactly.
What do you think, Reverend Terry, the biggest challenges? Let's just narrow it down here to the Quincy tri-state area. What is the biggest challenge now between the races? Because we are becoming increasingly brown. We're getting more people here from that are Hispanic in nature. Our black and white populations are entrenched. A lot of them have been here for generations. What do you think is the biggest barrier right now to, say, racial equality in our tri-state area?
Mindset. I think that racism is taught. And when we look at the children today, when you don't teach it to them, then they don't have it. However, sometimes we adults mirror what we learn to our children, and then they start to return relationships. So it's really a mindset that needs to be changed.
I agree. I think the 3- and 4-year-olds don't have any idea.
Absolutely.
They're just, if they're hitting somebody, it's because they're mm-hmm. they're mad at them, not because
right.
they're black
mm-hmm.
or white. I remember my husband's a bus driver, and this little boy was hitting this little girl, and my husband said, you can't do that. You can't hit her. He goes, you can't hit your classmate. He goes, she's not my classmate. She's my sister. and Les, what do you think? Because you've been around. You've taught in the public schools. Mm-hmm. You're part of our community and very, you know, tied into our community. What is, you know, because now we're getting more Asian people, more brown people. Mm-hmm. We're becoming a little bit more diverse, although Quincy is this white bread, really. You know, it's still a very white mm-hmm. bread community, mm-hmm. but we're becoming a little bit more diverse with people from different religions and cultures. What's the biggest hurdle right now to overcoming racism in our
area? Well, I think we're on the right track, and I think it's inclusion, including other races into everything that's going on in this society. And that's happening slowly but surely. You know, we have a new deputy chief.
Our deputy fire chief is
chief,
a man, you know? African-American man,
right.
Yes, doing great.
And
we're making some strides.
Right.
And again, it takes time.
If
you're going to be if you're going to have a fire chief who is a black man or a black woman, that'll take a while. You got to have a black firefighter first.
Right.
So we're
right.
The ranks now, I think, at the lower levels are starting to show that. I think there's a lot of progress that has been made. Of course, more needs to be done.
Right.
But you guys sit there with, Les has more than you, but a few more gray hairs on your head. And, you know, you've seen a lot change,
right.
but still much more needs to be
right.
done. So, folks, be part of that change. The 56th Annual Brotherhood Banquet. If you want tickets to the prime rib dinner, you won't want to miss it. 2:00 this Saturday, Quincy Senior Center, James Bailey is the keynote address. We've got lots of entertainment. Call this number for tickets. 222-2464.
That's correct.
222-2464. I noticed the women get to do all the hard work by taking the reservations. Les just gets to come and look pretty on the radio. Yes. Okay. It was very nice to meet you, Pastor Carl Terry.
You're funny.
Les, always a pleasure to have you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Go
for
forth
us.
With my blessing to, you know, enrich the world. Thank you.
We thank you for inviting us and sponsoring this time.
Thank you very much. And we're going to talk about Ulysses S. Grant in just a moment. But first, we have to head up to... we're on the air. Yeah, I've already done. You mean have we done the birthdays for today? Yeah, we do that in the morning. We've got a full boat here today. Arliss Dittmer, the new president of the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. Arliss, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get going. You've been around the Historical Society for a while.
A few years, not as long as some of the members. So I rely on them for their institutional memory.
And what does it mean to be the president of the Historical Society? That's a big job because no paycheck is attached to it, that's for sure.
No, there is no paycheck, and it is a lot of work. It's particularly a lot of work because our executive director is on military leave.
Yes.
And when he comes back, I have a feeling my workload will be much less.
And we anxiously await his return. Now, we're here today to talk. Dr. Tim Jacobs is also here. And Beth Young is also here, although she says she's not going to speak. But I'm sure if Jacobs gets out of line, Beth will reach in. We've got a couple events that are coming up that feature a very famous keynote speaker, and it's going to be all about Ulysses S. Grant. It kind of gets started on 7 o'clock Thursday night, February 27th, but then rolls over into the next day to encapsulate some high school students. So, Dr. Jacobs, let's talk about the symposium. This is the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County, the Tri-State Civil War Roundtable. They're teaming up together to sponsor Ulysses S. Grant, The Desperate Years. I didn't realize he was so desperate, but what were his desperate years?
Well, this is an interesting topic because it's not something you hear about that often. So much of the time you hear about Grant the general or Grant the president, but you rarely hear about Citizen Grant when he did struggle between his first stint in the Army and going back in during the Civil War. But he did have some desperate years, and Kurt Fields does such a good job with President Grant and General Grant that I am really looking forward to another look at Grant's life in those times. We're a little bit grim.
Yeah. Dr. Kurt Fields, he is a Grant impersonator. He brings Ulysses S. Grant to life. And when you try to do that, you know, we don't see Dr. Fields, we see Ulysses S. Grant. He's trying to really encapsulate what his life was like there. Now, you have an interesting venue for this, too, the O'Donnell Cookson Celebration of Life Home at 1435 State is putting this on. Usually you're at John Wood or the Kroc Center or maybe across the street at 4th and Main, but this is kind of a new venue.
Well, it is because Mr. O'Donnell and Mr. Cookson are both big history buffs. And they have offered their facilities for us to use. Interestingly enough, Mr. Cookson has got on loan from Carthage the catafalque that Lincoln is supposedly was on.
Right. So. Well, we think it's the one. We say it's the one. It's in the museum in Carthage as the one, so we'll go with it, right?
It certainly is the best replica we could ever get.
Okay.
And on the 27th of February, it's not going to be in Carthage. It's going to be in Quincy.
Okay, so if you want to see it, you can see it Thursday night at 7 o'clock, February 27th, at the O'Donnell Cookson Celebration of Life Home at 1435 State Street. Now, when people... If they don't know much about Ulysses S. Grant, I guess what I'm saying is, what would encourage people to come who are not already Grant buffs like you, Dr. Jacobs? Mm-hmm. What will they take away from this that they need to know or that you would like them to know a little bit more about one of our great presidents, our great Illinoisans, and many people don't know, a man who started much of his Civil War career, the first step off of his march was right here in Quincy, right?
Right here in Quincy, absolutely. So he did get his start in the Civil War right here. So we have some ties to Grant, but I think what I would like them to come away with is that for all that we know about President Grant and some very good things he did as president, and certainly the man who ended with Lincoln, helped end the Civil War, that he had some very difficult times. So I think sometimes we just think of these people as a president or a general, but we'll talk about his family life and his struggles, and he certainly did have some struggles in St. Louis and in Galena, so some local places.
He lost, I mean, like many great prominent men, he lost a lot of money in business. He wasn't as successful outside the military, perhaps, as he was inside public office, let's say,
well,
right?
Let's say he was just a very trusting person. And also, being a military man, when he told people to do things, he expected them to be done. And unfortunately, he was a little too trusting when he told some people or invested with some people. So, yeah, we're gonna have a little different look at Grant the man.
Now, one of the great things about having it at a funeral parlor is, as you mentioned, you've got the replicated body casket and catafalque of President Abraham Lincoln. So he'll kind of be lying in state.
Yes.
A wax rendition of President Lincoln will be lying there at the chapel there at O'Donnell Cookson. And you're also going to use they have this massive multimedia projection equipment there for celebrations of life. So you're really going to celebrate Grant's life, right?
Absolutely. We're going to tap into that wonderful multimedia, and they're going to have a great rendition on Grant. So that will just be another thing that we'll have in addition to Kurt Fields and the catafalque.
Why Grant? Why Grant for Quincy? This is not the first thing that you guys have put together. What is the fascination here with Ulysses S. Grant?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, Beth is a Grantophile.
That's the answer I was looking for. Now we've got down to the heart of it. Whatever Beth wants, Beth gets. Okay.
Well, not exactly, but I have long studied Grant, and I'm very intrigued by Grant. When I was in grade school, you know, years ago, Grant was listed at the bottom of the presidents, along with Warren Harding. And if you observe, he's moved up now about halfway with these annual polls with famous historians assessing and reassessing the
presidency. Well, is that because he's better or because everybody lately is worse? But we won't go there.
Well, you know, I appreciate that comment. But I think, adding to what Dr. Tim said, I believe that Grant was truly an honorable and decent man. I mean, he sold firewood on the streets of St. Louis to make money for his family, mm-hmm. even though his father-in-law was a wealthy landowner in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, Grant's farm.
And he just, every time he got kicked down, he got up. I think he had a lot to do with the Reconstruction going according to, or at least partially according to the plan that Lincoln laid out before he was assassinated, in that he wanted a peaceful, cooperative Reconstruction, not a stick-it-to-the-South Reconstruction. And I think in terms of race relations, Grant has done more than perhaps any president other than Lyndon Johnson.
Okay.
So, I mean, he was human. He made mistakes. He did things that were not right. But in the overall.
Right. That lack of punishment for the South after the war, because once Lincoln was assassinated, that was his full measure. And if somebody hadn't taken that over, it could have been bad. Arliss Dittmer, why the Historical Society so involved in Ulysses S. Grant?
Well, we always try to partner with other agencies, and we're happy and really get a lot of benefit out of partnering with the
Absolutely.
Civil War Roundtable. And I think the reason we're interested is because Grant was really a Midwestern person, and he lived in Illinois, he lived in Missouri, he lived in Ohio. And he fought for the many, many months of the war in the Western Theater, what's known as the Western Theater. And we don't know as much about those battles as we do about the Eastern. So I think he's important for us in this area.
There's also a component to this. We encourage all the adults to come on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, as many as possibly can. It is absolutely free of charge, but they want you to make reservations by calling the Historical Society. And that number is easy to remember if you know Quincy history. The John Wood Mansion was built in 1835. So if you'll just call 222-1835, you can find out anything you want to know about the Historical Society. But on Friday, thanks to some other benefactors, a bunch of students are going to be coming in from Senior High and Notre Dame, and they're going to get a whole symposium, not only with Dr. Kurt Fields speaking as General Grant, but Dr. Jacobs, you're one of those. What are you trying to infuse into these high schoolers about that portion of American history, that Civil War era history.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Dr. George Cricard. He helped underwrite this. But we'd like to get the high school students together, and this symposium will give them a different look at history. I think most people think of history as being dry dates and memorizing things, whereas we're going to tell stories. Because if you look at it, history is nothing but stories. And if you make those stories come alive, I think we can give, especially high school students, they think history's a little dry, but we can give it a little more impetus and probably get their attention.
Well, now, of course, you're a doctor at Quincy Medical Group. I can walk into the ambulatory clinic at any moment and get any kind of whiz-bang antibiotic or antiviral that I want. One of the things you love to tell them about is they don't think about it, but we didn't really even know what germs were back then. So there were a lot of problems in the Civil War treating the wounded, and yet, as all wars do, it advanced medical science.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things that I try and bring out is that for every man that died of a wound on the battlefield, two died of disease. And so many of the casualties were not necessarily a bullet or a cannonball or a sword, but they were those little germs that we did not know much about.
In fact, I think Lynn, one of our docents at the John Wood Mansion, likes to say the most dangerous weapon in the Civil War was this, and she holds up a cup, because when they drank out of the stream that everybody had been bathing and defecating in, they got sick, and that killed them more sometimes than the bullets.
Absolutely. Public health was not a big thing at that time, and you're right, those camps were rather filthy, and so we did pay a price for that, but we're much better today, and I think we learned a lot of lessons.
You're also, there's other speakers that are going to come, Whitman's Lincoln, and somebody's going to be Mary Todd Lincoln, to kind of give a female perspective to that. So you're hoping that these high schoolers will grab onto history, and it won't just be, like you said, these dry dates. Because if they really don't understand the narrative, if they don't get into the action of the story, that's when the excitement begins and builds, right?
Absolutely, and I think it's great to have Whitman, Brian Ellis talking on Whitman and Lincoln, because it adds that dimension of literature, and certainly wars have always been rich with literature, and when you think of not only Whitman, but Louisa May Alcott, and all the stories that are generated from the Civil War, I think that gives us another dimension besides just history. So history and English kind of go together, and I know that's a big thing for Beth.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, Uncle Tom's Cabin. Some people say that book probably precipitated the Civil War in many ways more than politicians did, shall we say, just because people became aware. A lot of Northerners had no idea. Well, for one thing, we don't have Twitter, and we don't have instantaneous Fox News 24/7. So a lot of people really didn't know what was going on. And the other thing about the Civil War that I think children need to understand, when Ulysses S. Grant is out, you know, fighting the Mexican War, he's out here on the Western frontier fighting in the Civil War, they didn't have the telegraph quite yet. That was a great invention that Abraham Lincoln pushed through, and then, of course, the trains all the way through to the West, but there was no communication. You could be out for months, maybe even years, and your family had no idea if you were dead or alive.
And I think that was one of the problems that Grant faced when he was away from his family and in California, and one of the reasons that he actually resigned from the military the first time is that he really missed his family and missed communicating with his family.
What was the relationship between U.S. Grant and Abraham Lincoln? Beth, you are much more the expert on Grant than probably anybody else in the room. What was their relationship like? Were there rocky roads, or was it always collegial?
I think not. I think Lincoln appreciated the fact that Grant would fight. He didn't dilly-dally around. He had objectives. He tried to meet those objectives. From anything I've read, he and Lincoln had great mutual respect, and he was absolutely heartbroken when Lincoln was assassinated. They met several times. I think it was just, as I said, absolute respect one for the other.
Okay. So this event is coming up. We want to encourage people to attend it. Folks, you don't get this kind of, quote, entertainment free of charge. And if you want to know more about Ulysses S. Grant, Dr. Kurt Fields, a nationally known Grant impersonator, is presenting The Desperate Years. It will be Thursday evening, February 27th at 7 p.m. at the O'Donnell Cookson Life Celebration Home at 1435 State. They've got all the whistles and bells with their sound system and their multimedia campaign to really bring this to life in modern day. Yes.
I was going to add one thing, Mary. We do have a few seats left for Friday morning. It's basically high school seniors. We have 170 students from QHS and QND, but there are a few seats left over. So any adults, anyone listening who might want to attend that, just simply call the 222-1835 and ask if there are still seats open for Friday. And they would be, you know, moving along from the one presentation, there are four presentations. So they would be with high school students, but if there are any adults, there are a few extra seats.
You could tell your top secret spies there to monitor right. their behavior. 9 to 11:30 Friday at John Wood Community College. Thank you to Dr. Tim Jacobs. Thank you to Beth Young. Congratulations, Arla Stittmer, on being the new president of the Historical Society. And to all that you do collaboratively, we're glad that you were here. We thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.